slammed a brick down onto her head. I jerked back as blood spattered. What the fuck? He brought the brick down once more to smash the skull open. I stared, uncomprehending as he tore pieces of skull aside and grabbed handfuls of brain to stuff into his mouth. It wasn't until he gobbled down the third handful and his features began to shift that it finally clicked.
Whoa. Dude.
He smiled around another fistful of brain. I watched in awe as his skin lightened and his limbs grew slimmer. His torso narrowed at the waist and widened at the hips. Her jawline softened. The cheekbones became a touch more refined and the eyes took on a Northern European shape, with the irises shifting to blue. His black hair fell out, leaving him briefly bald, before new hair sprouted and grew to a length similar to Christie's, though scraggly and unstyled, and mousy brown streaked with gray. Ha! She'd never really been blonde or auburn.
I need her clothes, Kang Christie said.
You sound just like her. That's so creepy.
I am her, he/she winked, and slipped Christie's wedges off. Which means I'm on the Saberton Board of Directors.
Holy shit, I breathed, fumbling to unbutton her blouse. You totally are.
It was brilliant. With our own Christie Charish and with the help of Andrew Saber, we could change Saberton from the inside. Except,
shit, dude, maybe this wasn't such a great idea. Christie is wanted by the FBI and...
We froze at the sound of running footsteps.
This was going to be hard to explain.
At least Kang Christie had no makeup and messy brown hair and therefore didn't look exactly like real Christie. And maybe whoever was approaching would assume real Christie had smashed her skull in the fall rather than getting it bashed in with a brick. Billy came running around the corner of the building and slid to a stop. He took in the woman in ill-fitting men's clothing, then the partially dressed dead woman on the ground, the smashed skull, the bloody brick, and the distinct absence of most of her brain. His gaze finally rested on me.
Gotta say, this assignment sure hasn't been boring.
Chapter 36. Sirens wailed in the distance.
Angel, get back upstairs and deal with the gators, Billy said. I'll take care of... this.
He waved a hand at the two Christies.
Take care of this how? I asked with suspicion. The mass-murdering Christie is the one on the ground. The scroungy one is... new.
I gathered as much, he said, manner still easy and friendly, though his eyes were guarded. Trust me, you really do need to get upstairs before someone else dies.
Kang Christie swayed and sank to her knees, but gave me a thumbs up. Pierce had been forced to rest and integrate after his transformation from the Pietro shape, but he'd been able to function for a while before completely collapsing.
Go, she said. I'm old enough to take care of myself.
Well, pardon me for worrying about an old lady, then.
I cast one more uncertain look at her, then raced for the front entrance. She was right. Her situation was as under control as it could be, given the circumstances, but I was the only one who could deal with the gators. Several dozen people milled at the far end of the parking lot. The sirens grew louder. Fire department and paramedics, no doubt, with deputies not far behind. The building security guard at the main entrance waved me right past. Billy must have given him a heads up that I'd be coming in. The fire alarm was still hooting, and of course the elevators weren't working. I slid to a stop at the bottom of the stairs. Gray tinged my vision, my ribs were on fire, and an overall achiness screamed that I hadn't fully healed from the fall.
Okay, okay, I muttered to my body. I'll be more considerate.
I sucked down another packet of brains, then climbed at a far more reasonable pace. Though I was still out of breath when I finally reached the third floor, the pain had faded. Cries for help and the growl bellows of gators echoed through the corridors as I ran through the LZ-1 suite. I found Sorsha, face covered in blood, sitting beside the closed door of the gator-filled microscope room. The short black guy from the genetics lab was on one knee beside her with the first aid kit, splinting her forearm. A thick lump of gauze already bound what must have been a nasty scalp wound. Kyle's body was nowhere in sight, and the pool of blood had been somewhat wiped up, with a streak extending down the corridor.
"Hey, ninja girl,"
short guy said.
"Hey, thanks for helping."
Sorsha's head lolled my way.
"Billy texted that you've dealt with Charish."
Yeah. She won't be any trouble.
How much did she know? I wasn't about to fish for that info while Short Guy was here. Are you okay?
I've been worse.
Sorsha glanced toward the microscope room door as two male voices hollered for help.
Charish's texts. One was on the electron microscope and I don't know where the other ended up. He was on a counter last I saw, and that wasn't going to last long.
That meant Fritz had been the gator food. Damn it. Even though he'd been working for the bad guys, he had seemed like a basically decent guy, a pro.
"Gators can climb," I said, "but the techs will be okay now that I'm here."
I silently told the gators to leave the two high ones alone, then touched Short Guy on the shoulder.
"What's your name?"
"Travis Montague," he said, as he tightened the last binding on the splint.
"Finally got to use my first responder training."
"I'm Angel."
"You did good, Travis.
Would you mind going down to meet the paramedics and show them the way up?"
"You got it."
Sorsha grabbed his forearm with her good hand.
"You are not to repeat, share, or otherwise disclose anything you've seen or heard here today. This entire situation is under federal investigation. Do you understand?"
"Yes, ma'am. I'm good at secrets. Part of my job."
"Thank you," she said, and released his arm. "I'll contact you soon for a post-incident interview."
"Do you need my..."
"I'll find you."
"Alrighty then."
He gave a nervous chuckle as he rose to his feet, then winked at me.
"See ya, ninja girl."
I crouched beside Sorsha and waited until I heard the outer door open and close.
"Where's Kyle's body?"
"In histology," she said. "Billy took care of him."
Tears stung my eyes and I blinked them back.
"How did Christy get past you?"
"While we were all distracted by the first explosions, she used her smartwatch to begin a countdown for the rest of the computers, including the one by me in the microscope room. After it blew, I lost consciousness, but came to in time to see Fritz, still zip-tied, cutting Charish's ties with a knife he must have had very well concealed. As soon as Charish was free, she took the knife, but instead of cutting Fritz's zip ties, she slit his throat and shoved him toward the alligators. The thrashing and blood distracted the gators, and she went right past them.
Poor Fritz. He'd been willing to sacrifice his life for his employer, only to have it taken in a totally fucked up way. I shoved away the mental image of Christy murdering him in cold blood, and instead reveled in the fact that I'd taken her off the playing field for good.
"I'm honestly shocked she didn't kill you," I said.
"I played dead since I was in no condition to fight."
Sorsha touched the bandage on her head.
"There was plenty of blood from the scalp wound for the ruse to be convincing. Charish tried to get my gun, but I use a retention holster, and she gave up."
"Glad she couldn't get it," I said fervently. "She'd have shot you for sure." I pushed to my feet. "I'd best take care of the gators before they make too much of a mess."
"Too late for that," she said with a humorless chuckle. We both looked up as the sound of a helicopter rattled the walls.
"Let's hope that's the good guys," I muttered.
I pulled the door open and stepped inside. The gators snapped and growled over an unrecognizable lump of gore. Fritz. Blood splattered the walls and equipment and pooled on the white tile beneath the gaiters. The stench of shit and blood and sweat hit me in a putrid wave. Harry Tech clung to the top of the electron microscope, while Beardzilla lay atop the built-in cabinets. Both were flushed and wild-eyed, understandably so.
"Angel, watch out!"
Harry Tech shouted.
"The blood! They went wild with the blood!"
"It's going to be okay. Just stay where you are." I had to give him props for being worried about my own safety. It was possible none of the techs were aware of precisely how evil Christie's schemes were, but I'd let Sorsha's special task force deal with that mess. One by one, the gators abandoned their meal and turned toward me. If gators could look guilty, they certainly did now. "It's all right," I said to them as I approached. "I could hardly expect you to ignore a meal dropped at your feet, right? But now it's time to go back to the pen. Y'all did great." I crouched, and the gators swarmed me, pushing snouts forward for rubs and screeches.
"Jesus," Beardzilla breathed.
"I'd stay up there if I were you," I told the Tex. "Trust me, there's no place to run." Not that I really needed to say so. I had a feeling those two would have to be pried off their perches. I gathered the gators and headed down the corridor toward their pen room, but stopped at the entrance to the main lab. Within, Portia lay cushioned on a pile of lab coats. Dr. Nikas sat beside her, holding her hand, head turned toward the script-filled whiteboard. "You're alive!" I shrieked and rushed into the room, belatedly telling the gators to stay put. Portia smiled sleepily.
"I am, aren't I? Amazing."
"It is. It is." I dropped to my knees and tenderly seized her in a hug.
"I'm so glad you chose my pawn to free your frogs," she said, words a little thick.
"You and me both." I released her, only now realizing that Dr. Nikas was rattling off technical terms to Reg, who scribbled on a notepad. Not far away, Brian and Rachel sorted through salvaged computer drives. Curses erupted in the corridor. Pierce.
"Why the fuck is the hallway filled with alligators?"
he shouted. "Oops, I'd better put the kids away." I scrambled to my feet and ran out to the hall. Pierce glared at the gators from a dozen feet away.
"What the fuck, Angel?"
"Hi, Pierce. Boy, do I have a lot to tell you after I take these guys home." I rounded up the gators and started down the corridor. "Be right back." He muttered something, but even my zombie ears couldn't pick it up over the snick and swoosh of alligator claws and tails. I doubted it was nice to see you, Angel. I got them into their pen without incident and told them again how wonderful they were and promised they wouldn't have to live cooped up forever. They raised their voices in eerie, warbly growls that penetrated to my bones. I joined their song for a brief moment, then returned to the lab, pretending not to notice the smears of blood the gators had left behind.
"Where's Christie?"
Pierce snapped the instant I stepped through the door. "Dead," I replied, which earned me the attention of everyone in the room. I went on to explain how I confronted Christie on the roof and then made sure the extraction team couldn't rescue her by taking her over the edge with a flying leap. I hesitated to tell the part about Kang, since Rachel and Portia didn't know about the mature zombie ability to take on a new form. But fuck it. The FBI agents knew, and Rachel was utterly loyal to the tribe, and Portia... well, I had a feeling Dr. Nikas wouldn't be keeping secrets from her. "But we still have a Christie Charish." I took a deep breath and related how Kang ate her brain and took on her form, and how Billy said he would manage the whole Christie situation.
"Billy Upton?"
Pierce said, eyes narrowing.
"He's one of Christie's people."
"Actually, he's one of Sorsha's."
"Jesus, Angel. You left that mess with the FBI?"
Though I wanted to yell at him, I calmly folded my arms over my chest. "Yes. Would you like to know why?"
"I would."
I kept my expression and tone super chill. Because it was the right choice. Because Agent Aberdeen works with a special task force and already knows all about us. Because we need help. Their help to pull off the whole Kang Christie con and keep a lid on our secrets. Pierce glowered for another few seconds, then shook his head.
All right. I probably would have done the same in your shoes.
I resisted the urge to feign a heart attack at his decision to agree with me, and instead simply offered a cool nod. But what sucks hard is that Christie didn't have anything about the cure in her briefcase. Pierce sighed.
I'm so sorry, Angel.
I blinked to keep back tears. Everything had been so chaotic, I hadn't had time to really let it hit me. We had no cure, and Nick and the others were going to die. There's something else, I said, chest tight and aching. Kyle is dead. Pierce sobered.
What happened?
I told him about Christie and her new anti-zombie serum that turned zombies into mindless slaves, and how Kyle had pushed me out of the way and taken the hit. Dr. Nikas disengaged from Portia, went to the whiteboard, and wrote and erased. Wrote and erased. I told Pierce how I thought a combat mod might slow it down, and how Kyle had said no, but he was ready. Tears streamed down my cheeks, and I didn't try to stop them. I hadn't cried yet for Kyle, and he deserved my grief. Finally, I told Pierce about the promise I'd made last year in New York, and then told him how I shot Kyle. Shock amplified my grief when Pierce stepped forward and put his arms around me.
You did the right thing, he murmured. I was wrong to have Kyle turned against his will. Ari told me. Brian told me. I knew it in my heart. But despite what I did to him, Kyle was a faithful soldier, never giving less than his all. You were right to make the promise and to keep it.
Over by the whiteboard, Dr. Nikas said,
Reg, pull up the analysis of protein gel sample 2 again.
Then after a moment,
Angel, forgive me.
I looked up and wiped my eyes. What is it?
I'm sorry to disturb you.
He had a dry erase marker in his hand and a blue ink smudge on his nose and cheek.
But this is important. I am on the verge of a breakthrough.
You are? I shoved away from Pierce. What can I do?
Jacques sent the analysis of the protein packet gel that killed the patient at the gym. It had Trank components.
That's right. She said she was testing it on patient 9, but he wasn't supposed to die. So she tweaked the formula, which is what Kyle got. Dr. Nikas passed the marker to Reg and began preparing test tubes and solutions.
The non-Trank factors in the gel analysis are more mysterious, but your description of their purpose, to destroy higher brain function and create a mindless slave, brought the pieces together for me.
He sent Reg to fetch a cold pack.
She created the LZ1 patients as her test subjects. The formulation of the gel was tailored for LZ1, so your interception of that packet has not only delivered to me what I believe to be the key to a cure, but also strips the veil from the misinformation Christie had fed me.
Holy shit. The Psycho Woman created a killer epidemic not only to figure out how to be immortal, but to enslave zombies as well. Whoa! Do you think the killer Trank in Connor's ear was the first serum test? He went still, considering.
It fits. There were non-Trank factors in the earwax sample as well. I do believe the purpose was to experiment, with murder as the result.
And she was stringing you along on the cure?
Whenever I would get close to what I now believe is the right path, she would counter with a perfectly reasonable alternative, a detour rather than a roadblock.
He took a small cold pack from Reg and placed it in the bottom of a beaker.
But I'm close to the answer now, Angel.
He handed me a test tube.
Will you give me a saliva sample?
Yes. Yes, you can have all the spit you want. I hocked up a loogie and spat it into the vial Dr. Nikas handed me. He grimaced as he passed me another tube.
Saliva only, please.
Oh, sorry. I dutifully worked up a mouthful of only spit.
Fried dill pickles, seafood gumbo, brains, and filled the tube.
He set the tube into the beaker as if my spit was the most precious liquid in the world, then turned back to the whiteboard and snapped out instructions. Reg leaped to follow them, his tall, angular form moving with surprising speed and agility. A soft smile pulled at my mouth. Kyle's death had served his own purpose, yet he'd not only saved my life by letting the trank hit him instead of me, but his selfless act would end up saving the lives of Nick and so many others. Christy couldn't help but gloat to me, and in doing so, told me the effects of the serum. Rachel had taken Dr. Nikas's place beside Portia, and Pierce was on the phone. Brian was gone, but I knew why he'd left and where he was now. I slipped out of the lab and down the hall. As I approached the corner, I heard a deep male voice.
Nope, there's no one else you need to worry about. Agent Aberdeen is the only serious injury.
I stepped around the corner to see a square-jawed man in a dark suit standing beside Sorsha, while two paramedics tended to her injuries. One of them cast a dubious glance at the blood in the corridor, Kyle's and Fritz's, but apparently didn't feel there was any point arguing with the agent. Agent Squarejaw pierced me with a measuring look as I approached. I ignored his appraisal and glanced into the microscope room as I passed. A fire blanket had been placed over what was left of Fritz, and all four techs sat zip-tied against one wall. At the far end was Reno, who sported a busted lip and a second black eye that I suspected were courtesy of Kyle.
Agent Gallagher, Sorsha said, this is Angel Crawford. She has been most instrumental in dealing with the situation here.
Gallagher gave me a curt nod.
Your assistance is greatly appreciated.
His words were clipped and precise as if he'd said them thousands of times before. He looked back at Sorsha.
And Dr. Charish?
Billy will brief you, she said. The situation has taken an interesting turn.
Yeah, I said. I think Dr. Charish has had a change of heart.
Literally. Don't worry, Angel, Sorsha said. This isn't the first time we've dealt with and kept quiet. A weird outcome.
Good to hear. I gestured toward the microscope room. What about Reno and the techs and how much they know about, well, everything? I couldn't exactly come out and say zombies in front of the paramedics.
My supervisor has a way of ensuring discretion. I gulped and lowered my voice. This isn't a deal where they just disappear, is it? Nothing of the sort. They'll simply be disinclined to speak about the issue of concern.
She spoke it as if it was a matter of fact. Okay, then. Would you excuse me a moment? I walked away without waiting for an answer, then quietly entered the histology room, closing the door behind me. Brian was on one knee, beside Kyle's supine body. A blood-soaked lab coat had been wrapped around Kyle's head to my relief. The exit wound for a shot like that would be gruesome. That wasn't how I wanted to remember him, and I was glad Brian seemed to feel the same way. This was his zombie baby, despite the turning being without Kyle's consent. I put my hand on Brian's shoulder. He covered it with his own and gave it a light squeeze. You okay? I asked.
Better now.
He looked up at me.
And you?
Better now. He got to his feet and embraced me.
Thank you.
I didn't need to ask what for. Come on. Let's get back to the others. We stepped out to see that Sorsha had been loaded onto the stretcher. Good luck with... I stopped at the sound of running footsteps.
Angel, Brian.
Dr. Nikas raced around the corner, Portia in his arms.
We have to get to the Trib Lab immediately.
Panic shot through me. Is something wrong with Portia?
Dr. Nakis came to a stop.
What? No, she is yet unable to walk, and carrying her seemed most expedient. We must return to the tribe lab to finish the cure.
You found it? You figured it out?
I believe I have, he said. Come, there is no time to waste.
Hold on a second,
Gallagher said.
We need to take statements. Ow.
He glared down at Sorsha, who had pinched his arm. Hard.
Let them go, she said, firmly. There are lives at stake. I'll get the statements later.
I breathed a thanks to Sorsha. Dr. Nakis took off at a run for the roof stairs, with Brian on his heels and me bringing up the rear. What about Pierce? I called as we bounded up the steps.
He and Reg are staying here for the cleanup, Dr. Nakis said.
The helicopter waited on the roof, ready to go. At its door, Dr. Nakis thrust Portia into Brian's arms, then dug a syringe from his lab coat and jabbed it into my arm, straight through my shirt.
Ow!
I said, even as he retrieved Portia from Brian and helped her into the chopper. I climbed in after and got myself buckled in. I started to ask Dr. Nakis what he'd injected, but he was already deeply absorbed and furiously scribbling notes onto one of Christie's legal pads. He didn't even look up when Brian buckled him and Portia in. As for Portia, she gave Brian a sleepy smile of thanks, then leaned her head against Dr. Nakis's shoulder and closed her eyes. Without pausing his writing, Dr. Nakis took her hand in his and cradled it close, a move so casually tender that I had to look away and hide my grin. A yawn caught me by surprise, followed by a serious case of the sleepies. Maybe the stay-awake mod was wearing off, or maybe it was whatever Dr. Nakis had jabbed me with. Either way, as the rotors wound up, my eyes closed.
Angel. Angel.
I woke to Dr. Nakis shaking my shoulders.
Come, there is no time to waste.
His voice sounded distant, muffled. My head pounded as if I'd been drinking all night back in my pre-zombie days.
Brian, help her, please.
Dr. Nakis carried Portia out. I fumbled with the seat harness, only to have Brian unbuckle it for me. Somehow he managed to get me out of the helicopter without my weirdly numb legs giving way.
What the fuck is wrong with me?
I slurred.
It's from the injection he gave you, Brian said. That's all I know.
He wrapped an arm around my waist and fast walked us toward the door. With the movement, an all-body tingle gradually replaced the numbness. Jacques and Philip were waiting for us by the entrance. Dr. Nakis passed Portia to Philip, then gestured for me to hurry after him. It was a good thing the tingle was turning into an electric rush, like a super shot of combat mod, because Dr. Nakis sprinted into the building with Jacques. I disengaged from Brian and ran after them to the medical wing. Toward Nick's room, I realized, as we turned onto his corridor. Dr. Nakis burst into his room, with me a second behind him. Bear shot from the chair.
What's wrong? What happened?
On the bed, Nick moaned.
Brains.
I didn't know the answers to Bear's questions, so I gestured to Dr. Nakis, who gestured right back at me.
Go on, Angel. Bite, Nick. By now your parasite has synthesized the compound I injected into you, but you need to bite him now.
He took my arm and, not so gently, pushed me in the direction of the bed.
Bite him, Angel.
Good thing I trusted Dr. Nakis with my entire being. Plus, I was willing to do anything to save Nick. Or anywhere?
As long as you break the skin and salivate.
As I moved to the side of the bed, Nick rolled his head toward me.
Angel.
I leaned down, cupped the back of his head with one hand, and tugged the hospital gown off his shoulder. Before he could snap at me, I pulled him close and bit down hard on his trapezius, tore until I tasted blood. Nick howled. I made sure plenty of spit got into the wound, then released him and stepped back, wiping my mouth with the back of my hand. He thrashed in the restraints, screaming and slavering.
I don't think it worked, Doc, I said, voice shaking.
Patience, Angel. It may take a few minutes.
Bear took my hand. The minutes ticked by. I stole a glance at Dr. Nikas. He watched Nick, no sign of uncertainty on his face. The screaming and thrashing stopped, as if a switch had been thrown. Nick's eyes closed, and his head lolled to the side, yet his chest still rose and fell, so whatever was going on, it hadn't killed him. Bear's grip tightened on my hand.
Come on, Nick,
he murmured.
Come on, son.
Nick's eyes fluttered open. I held my breath. Though his eyes were bloodshot, the cloudiness was gone. He blinked and focused on me.
Angel?
I threw myself at him, seizing him, carefully, in a hug while Jacques swiftly released the restraints. You're okay? You're okay?
Yeah.
He weakly hugged me back.
I'm okay.
What happened? Where am I?
Long story. You went shambler, but you sure you're okay?
Achy. Head hurts. Starving.
I fought down a burst of panic. Hungry? For what?
Burger and fries, maybe? But I'd probably eat anything you put in front of me and then some.
That sparked more hugging and crying, and Bear came in for hugs and tears as well. After a moment, Dr. Nikas tapped my arm.
Angel, we must go now.
Go where?
To the gym.
Oh, right. Oh, wow. Am I going to have to bite all of those people?
I'm afraid so.
I clacked my teeth together and grinned. Let's do this. Chapter 37. Arriving in the helicopter caused the expected stir at the high school gym. Even better, Agent Gallagher and another member of the Special Task Force were there to make sure we had full private access to the gym. The medical personnel still got testy when we kicked them out, but at least we had authority on our side, for once. I went up and down the rows, biting one patient after another, with a break between each one to rinse my mouth. Sponge baths simply didn't cut it for sweating, slathering shamblers. By the time I bit the last patient, the first ones were coming around. But I didn't relax until Bear's people from the bowling alley were awake and coherent again. After confirming the recoveries were proceeding as expected, Dr. Nikas gave the okay for the FBI agents to allow Dr. Bauer and her team back in. She was understandably pissed off at being removed, but forgot her annoyance as soon as she realized the outcome of our secret visit. Dr. Nikas gave her his contact info and said to let him know if anyone didn't fully recover, and then we headed to the hospital. We took a car rather than the chopper this time, with Brian driving and the FBI agents escorting.
Aren't people going to wonder about all of the bite marks? I asked Dr. Nikas. And won't they be able to trace them back to me?
You were far too busy to notice, but by the time the patients regain their senses, the bites have healed. My formulation was designed to stimulate a healing burst from your parasite to repair bodily damage caused by LZ1, and fortuitously, the bite as well.
I silently thanked my precious parasite once again. You rock. I just realized something. Christy was going to destroy all zombies with her anti-zombie serum. I looked at him. That's why she thought you should leave the tribe. Because she respects you. She didn't want to destroy you as well.
And had I survived the destruction of all zombies, I would have focused my entire being on destroying her.
He gave me a smile.
Fortunately for us all, you have done so already.
Aw, shucks. I'm just a destroy-your-enemies kind of gal.
That made him laugh, which warmed me to the toes. At the hospital, I repeated my bite and spit routine with all 22 patients, ending with Bear's survivalist buddy, Dreadlocks, Mr. August Lejeune. His eyes fluttered open as soon as I pulled back from the bite.
It's you,
he murmured.
You were in my dreams.
I was?
Singing. Strange song.
His eyes drifted shut again.
Gators.
What the?
Dr. Nakes pulled me aside.
I suspect the telepathic connection carried over somewhat with the LZ-1, though likely as little more than subconscious or dream fragments. Fascinating.
I grinned. You say fascinating. I say weird. Yet weird or not, August was the last on my two-bite list. With all infected patients treated, we collapsed into the car.
Now, we must return to Nuquest Corps. We have more work to do there,
Dr. Nikas said. You mean the infected gators, right? Please tell me you don't expect me to bite them. He laughed, happier and lighter than I'd seen him in, well, as long as I'd known him.
No. Not only would that be awkward, your teeth couldn't penetrate their hide. We'll have to do it the hard way.
The hard way involved me spitting and spitting and spitting into a flask. When I could spit no more, Dr. Nikas swirled the container and held it up to the light.
Under normal circumstances, saliva without a bite would be inadequate to spread the parasite, or in this case, the parasite and its synthesized byproducts, i.e. the cure.
He doctored the saliva with various substances.
But you have been biting today. A lot.
I get it. When I bite, it activates the parasite to come out and play? He chuckled.
Precisely.
He made a few more tests and adjustments, then poured the mixture into a hypodermic gun. In the gator room, Dr. Nikas opened a small bottle and waved it around. My nose tickled even though I couldn't detect an odor. Biggie and Tupac bellowed and splashed out of the pool toward the fence, the smaller ones racing after. But their attention was on Dr. Nikas, not me. What the hell is that?
A pheromone I hoped would attract infected gators.
I cocked my head as I worked through his statement. Oh, to use in the swamp so we can make sure we find any that are left out there?
Precisely.
He screwed the cap back onto the bottle.
We'll send an inoculation team out every day until we are confident all have been found.
Relieved, I entered the pen and got the gators lined up and made sure they behaved themselves. With the help of Reg and Rachel, we got each and every one inoculated. As soon as we finished, we retreated beyond the safety of the fence to watch and wait and hope my spit cure worked. For nearly a minute, nothing happened. Then, one by one, their hide shifted back to healthy dark green, and their eyes lost the milky film. Normal alligators once again. Y'all were great, I told them. The coolest pets ever. They probably didn't understand me anymore since our connection had been due to the disease, and I didn't feel them at the edge of my mind anymore. I heaved a sigh. I'm going to miss having y'all around. We headed for the door. When will they be released? I asked Dr. Nikas.
This evening, he replied. I'm assuming you wish to accompany them to the swamp.
Yeah, that would be... I jumped at a bellow from Tupac. The gators were lined up along the fence, snouts pressed against the chain link. I let out a squeal of delight and ran back to give scritches. You still like me? Biggie let out a low growl warble as I rubbed his snout. They didn't croon anymore, and the weird mental link we'd shared had faded, but it seemed they still considered me a mama of sorts. Well, you won't be in here much longer, I said, and gave them one last round of nose rubs. My phone buzzed as we finally left the room. Alan Prejean. Shit, I'd forgotten to update him. I paused to take the call while the others headed for the lab. Hey, Alan. Dr. Nikas found the cure. Nick is better, and so is everyone else. Sorry I didn't call sooner, but I've had kind of a hectic morning. He laughed.
Yeah, I figured as much. The CDC guys are losing their shit because they want to know how it was treated and why they weren't kept in the loop. But most people are so relieved the epidemic is over that they're not paying the CDC much attention. Death toll 17. but it could have been so much worse.
17 more souls to help throw your ass into hell, Christy fucking Charish. Remember Special Agent Aberdeen? I suspect she and her boss will make a few calls and quiet the CDC down.
That's good to hear. So, will you be back at the coroner's office tomorrow?
Absolutely. Weird that I was eager to get to work.
Excellent. See you then.
I returned to the main lab where Rachel, Reg, and Pierce had finished gathering up everything that belonged to the tribe, along with a plastic bin of partially destroyed computer parts. What's all that for? I asked as I helped carry stuff to the helicopter.
The drives are damaged, but aren't destroyed,
Pierce said.
There is still a chance we can retrieve data from them. I know a lady who did recovery work for the NSA. She's expensive as all hell, but if she could get back any more of Christie's work, it would be worth it.
But we already have a cure, I pointed to myself.
It's not the cure we're interested in,
he said.
Christy was working on how to become a mature zombie without having to be a zombie. That's how she expected to become essentially immortal. But Dr. Nikas has other ideas from the direction the research was going.
He climbed into the helicopter and buckled in. Silent, I followed and sat across from him, fastened the seat harness like an old pro, and got my headset in place. I waited until we were in the air, then tapped Pierce's leg and held up three fingers. Kang knows how to force maturity, I said, once he was on Channel 3 with me. But he had a good reason not to tell you how he did it.
I know,
he said.
He was right to keep it from me for so long. But I don't want to use his technique. Trust me, I know how uncontrolled I can get.
He shook his head.
But now I'm hoping that Dr. Nikas can modify his technique. Adapt it to prevent the hyperaggression or any other unfortunate side effects.
And you're hoping that Christie's research might have answers?
Dr. Nikas is, and therefore I am.
He fell silent, but didn't switch the headset channel. I don't always agree with your methods or attitude, I said after a moment. But there's no denying you want the best for the tribe and all zombies. He met my eyes.
I want us to be as safe and secure as possible.
Exactly. Which is why you need to take back tribe leadership. He started to protest, but I shushed him. Look, after today's fun and games, pretty much everyone who matters knows you're Pietro, even the FBI. So it's not a security risk anymore. Plus, Marcus hates being a figurehead. For his sake, you should either let him really be the tribe head or take over yourself. But you and Marcus will both be happier if you just take over. He regarded me with a slight smile.
You think so?
I know so. Marcus wants to go to law school. He'd be more benefit to the tribe as a kick-ass lawyer.
You're right.
Damn, dude, that's the second you're right in one day. You need to pace yourself. I grinned. But while I'm on a roll, you also need to tell Jane the truth about who you really are. I leaned forward as much as my harness would allow. I saw you stalking her the other day. I was at the pond, and I saw you watching her house. I know you still love her, so you should do something about it.
This time, you're not right,
he said with a laugh. Then held up a hand when I opened my mouth to tell him he was full of shit.
I wasn't stalking her that day. She knew I was there.
His smile widened at my perplexed expression.
Jane has known the truth since not long after I became Pierce. But since it would look bad for a respected congresswoman to be seen in a relationship with a younger man so soon after her fiancé's death, we've been keeping the relationship secret. The day you saw me at the pond, I was waiting for her visitor to leave. When it looked like he was going to be there a while, Jane called to let me know.
That's so awesome, I said with a happy sigh.
Glad you approve. We figure we can start dating openly this fall.
Well, in the meantime, Your secret is safe with me.
I know it is, Angel.
By the time we made it back to the tribe lab, Portia was moving around under her own power. She greeted Dr. Nakis with a heart-melting hug and kiss. Then the two of them headed toward his private quarters. I silently cheered them on, so happy for both of them, but extra especially so for Dr. Nakis. I then checked on Bear and Nick, who was already up and around. I gave Nick an enthusiastic greeting that raised his heart rate nicely, then returned to the media room and helped my dad pack up the play box. Bear is heading back to town soon, now that he and Nick are in the clear, I told him. He'll give you a ride if you want.
Sure do, because I got me an appointment at 4 this afternoon.
Appointment for what? His eyes crinkled as he smiled.
Getting me a physical exam. The whole works. And it turns out Gina works at the Y, and she said she'd be like a personal trainer to me for a bit so I can learn how to exercise right and not hurt my back and maybe make it better.
Gina, your girlfriend? My dad doubled over in laughter and slapped his knee.
Me and Gina? Nah, she ain't much more than your age. Bartended a couple of years down at Castor's where I did cleanup, but ended up in a mess last month when her boyfriend left her and her kid. She also works the front desk at the Y and cleans houses. We hammered out a deal where she'd clean our place in trade for me watching little Carter while she cleaned other houses. Trying to make ends meet, you know, working 3 jobs.
You're babysitting? I grinned.
You rock.
And she does a kick-ass job on the house. I looked him over. And if she can get you to exercise and go to the doctor, she has my blessing.
That was you, Angelkins. That got me seeing about my health and all.
Then I'm damn glad I came down on you about it. I gave him a kiss on the cheek. You keep on listening to me, and we'll be all right. After Bear and my dad left, I hung out with Nick in the media room and filled him in on everything that happened. Then we just kind of cuddled and relaxed and watched movies and did a whole lot of nothing, which was wonderful, zero-stress time. My dad texted halfway through The Fifth Element. Your car was in the driveway when I got home. Note under wiper. A picture was attached of a small piece of paper that read, Everything's cool with BB. Thanks for the help, BU. BU was Billy Upton. I smiled and texted a reply. Thanks. Had to leave my car when Nick got sick, and my friend Billy was nice enough to deliver it to the house. And apparently he had smoothed things over with Big Bubba, judging by the note. That was a load off my mind. Later in the afternoon, Dr. Nakis examined Nick and pronounced him fully recovered, which meant that Nick could accompany me for the release of the gators. That evening, with the help of Philip and several other tribe security, I cajoled and encouraged the gators to climb into rolling cage crates. Once we finally got them loaded in a box truck, we headed for the swamp boat launch we'd used for our gator hunt mission. Weird that it was only a few days ago. It seemed forever. Philip backed the truck up to the edge of the water. We opened the truck doors and the crates. Then I retreated to stand by Nick. The little gators needed no convincing, and quickly flopped onto the ramp and waddle slid into the swamp. Biggie and Tupac went last, lumbering down with reptilian majesty to slip into the water. They turned to face me, eyes and snout visible above the surface.
Oh, all right, I said.
I shucked off my shoes and waded in until I was waist deep. Biggie and Tupac rubbed up against me like cats, rumbling the water until I finally pushed them away and bid them a laughing goodbye. With that, they swam off, disappearing quickly into the gloom. I waded back to shore and Nick.
I have the weirdest girlfriend ever, he said with a smile and kissed me.
So I'm your girlfriend now?
Sure are, he said. Let's go home so you can get out of those wet clothes.
life returned to a semblance of normal busy fairly quickly. Saturday, Brian reported that Linda Garrison, the health department doctor, had filed a police report stating that a man fitting Harlan Murtaugh's description used threats against her family to force her to get him access to a patient, Beckett Connor. I passed the info on to Alan, who seemed relieved that she was not, in fact, a Saberton baddie. Sunday evening, I asked Jane if there was a way to get the warning signs replaced at the dangerous curve out on Highway 1268, where Spencer Lee had died, and where Marcus had kept me from the same fate by turning me into a zombie. Jane made a few calls, and by Monday afternoon, the new signs were in place. It sure was nice having friends who could get shit done. On Tuesday, I borrowed a black dress from Naomi and attended Connor's funeral. Since he'd died in the line of duty, the attendance was massive, with every law enforcement agency in the parish in attendance. I even spied Special Agent Gallagher in the back, but had no desire to go over and strike up a conversation. But I did give my condolences personally to Connor's mother. "I'm sorry for your loss," I murmured, then silently added, "I avenged your son's death and killed his murderer." With Justine's help, I finished my essay in English comp about the worst birthday ever and didn't pull any punches. The professor loved it and would have given me an A except for the fact that I had a tendency to put commas in all the wrong places, and so I ended up with a B+. As far as biology went, I asked Isabella Romero, the student who Professor Dingle had given such a hard time, if she wanted to be study partners. And when she had trouble finding a babysitter for her young son, my dad was happy to help out. Kyle's body was cremated, as per his wishes, and we had a private ceremony for him at the lab. Everyone spoke and did their public grieving. Then we broke out some of Dr. Nikas's zombie booze concoction, again as per Kyle's wishes, and had a rollicking wake for a proper send-off. Bear, Nick, Alan, and my dad were there as well, because even though they hadn't known Kyle in life, they were grateful for everything he'd done for all of us. And Marla and Moose wandered around in doggy heaven, getting the pets and scritches they so very much deserved. The party was just winding down when Pierce called me over.
"Jane texted that Andrew Saber is holding a press conference in 5 minutes. Meet up in the media room."
Soon enough, Pierce, Dr. Nikas, Brian, and I were clustered around the TV. Andrew stood before a throng of reporters in the lobby of Saberton's New York headquarters. Appearing vibrant and confident, he announced that his mother had stepped down and that he was now CEO of Saberton. I snorted. "Stepped down my ass, more like shoved, kicking, and screaming, I bet. Good riddance." Andrew went on to praise Dr. Christy Charish for her stellar work to unlock the cure for the LZ1 epidemic. He then revealed that, tragically, Dr. Charish had suffered a mild stroke immediately after casting her vote in the Saberton board meeting and would be taking a sabbatical from research. But the silver lining was that she would be at his side to help lead Saberton in a new, humanitarian and eco-friendly direction. He closed with a sappy promise of a brighter tomorrow, thanked the reporters for coming, and left without answering the shouted questions.
"Hot damn," I said as Pierce muted the TV. "That was a brilliant move since Kang Christie doesn't know squat about research."
Pierce looked thoughtful.
"Kang has well and truly ensconced himself in the Saberton hierarchy."
I poked him in the chest.
"That's right. And you and Kang are going to put your centuries of differences behind you and work together to create a brighter tomorrow for all zombies. Right?"
He surprised me with a genuine laugh.
"What do you say, Ari?"
Dr. Nikas smiled.
"I say that we are in a golden moment of opportunity, and if you fuck it up, I will have your head in a vat until you come to your senses."
That produced a round of laughter from everyone, including Pierce. But as it died away, Dr. Nikas sobered.
"With Kang only masquerading as a scientist, The burden of research rests on my shoulders. I need more help.
The tribe accountant was looking into the possibility of finding a dying neurobiologist or the like who might be willing to be turned, I pointed out. And you already have Portia.
Both with excellent potential.
He blew out a breath, and his shoulders relaxed.
There's no rush. We're in this for the very long haul.
We. Not just Dr. Nikas, or Pierce, or Brian. It included me as well. I had a potentially very long life ahead, and damn it, I really liked the idea of spending at least some of it helping the tribe. My people. Bring about an honest-to-goodness better tomorrow. A gasp came from the direction of the door. Naomi stared at the TV where Andrew waved to the press as he entered an elevator, and the words, "Saberton CEO Nicole Saber steps down," ran along the bottom. She burst into un-Naomi-like tears. I ran over to pull her into a hug. She had been worried about her twin for weeks, and now not only was Andrew safe, but he was being the kind of man she'd always wanted him to be. Dr. Nikas herded Pierce and Brian out while I guided Naomi to the nearest sofa. I plopped down beside her and took her hand. Your mother has been removed from power, and you'll be able to see Andrew again soon. He'll make sure of it. She sniffled and swiped at her eyes.
It's like waking up from a nightmare. I'm not sure if it's real or not.
Oh, it's for real, babe. I gave her hand a squeeze. The bad shit is behind you, and your brother is ready to mend fences.
Everything's falling into place for the zombies, too.
She stole a glance at me.
You know what we need, since we're at the beginning of a whole new era?
A sly smile tugged at her mouth. Chocolate?
Ice cream, silly.
She said, then widened her eyes. Together we shouted, "Chocolate ice cream!" We raced to the lab's kitchen and spent the next half hour eating chocolate fudge ice cream, talking and laughing. It felt good. Once we'd stuffed ourselves sick, she gave me a hug and left for her security shift. I wiped ice cream off my chin, then made my way to the headroom to change out the nutrient goo. Humming, I put in my code, pulled the door open, and stepped in. Dr. Nikas loomed in the semi-darkness beside the empty regrowth tank, one hand gripping his temples between fingers and thumb as if he had a headache. I started to ease out of the room. Angel, he said, stay. I slowly closed the door behind me. Is something wrong? He lowered his hand.
Take a look in Adam Campbell's vat.
I peered through the glass lid into the crockpot of nutrient snot and its resident head. All seemed normal in a gray-skinned, severed head horror show sort of way. Then I saw it. A little bud, about the size of a jelly bean, sprouting from the neck stump. Just like with Kang's head.
He's regrowing. What changed?
Everything.
Dr. Nikas put his arm around my shoulders and gazed down into the vat with me.
I spent this past week reviewing what we recovered and what I stole of Christie's immortality work. She wasn't as close to a solution as she'd believed, but the direction of her research sparked a fresh line of thought, and I tested a new nutrient formulation on Adam. I discovered the progress only moments before you walked in.
That's awesome! I paused. It is awesome, right? I mean, when I walked in, you looked upset.
Upset, no. I was a bit overwhelmed by the enormity of the implications.
He gave my shoulders a squeeze and stepped away from the vat.
This discovery opens untried research paths. The way isn't clear yet, but I see the potential, the end result. Not with development of a brain substitute, which I have determined would never healthily maintain the parasite, but a way to quasi-mature zombies so the amount of brains required for sustenance would be greatly reduced.
My smile grew. Like how you and Pierce and Kang need a lot less brains.
That's brilliant.
Research and development will likely take years, but I am certain it can be achieved.
He shook his head.
I wonder how Dr. Charish would feel if she knew her legacy was not immortality for herself, but the trigger for a long-term lifeline for zombies.
She would hate it from the very depths of her cold, black, shriveled heart.
What a tragedy,
he sighed.
If she had been open and honest with her findings, rather than the cruel egoist she was, such marvels we could have accomplished.
Yeah. But you're the real foundation of all this. You just need people around to spark your genius and keep you on your toes. He gave me a warm smile.
Like you.
Me? I laughed. I won't argue with the keeping you on your toes part, but I'm not much of an intellectual spark.
Don't sell yourself short, Angel. You grasp concepts readily and often see solutions others may not.
I blinked. I do?
Look at all you have accomplished over the past year and a half. The scrapes you've wiggled out of, the clever ideas you've put forth. You even keep Pierce honest, and that is no mean feat.
I squirmed, blushing. I guess I'm a survivor.
That you are. A survivor with intellect you don't yet appreciate. You proposed that the mosquito bites weren't really mosquito bites. You uncovered the link between the water bottles and Shambler's turning. And remember how you said you thought the combat mod might have stimulated the anesthetized parasite in Kyle. I tested the process as part of my inquiry into Christie's work, and you were right. You didn't know the specifics of how it would function, but you came to a solid conclusion worthy of a hypothesis.
I blushed more. He regarded me, eyes deep and ancient and wise.
What do you want to do with your life? If you could have your heart's desire.
I started to blurt out a line about having peace and quiet, enough money to live on and keep my dad safe, a home. But that wasn't what he meant. He wanted to know my impossible secret dream. Tears pricked my eyes. I like my work at the morgue, and I love biology, and I love working here with you. But I wish it could be more. Wish I could be more.
In what way?
He asked quietly. Educated, so I could really help. Not just some classes in community college, but... My old loser self tried to tell me I was making a fool of myself. That Dr. Nikas didn't care about my stupid fantasy. But I knew better. I wasn't being a fool, and Dr. Nikas cared for real. I'd like to be a neurobiologist. I know it's kind of crazy, I just...
Angel, there is no reason to not live your dream.
I'm just so far behind. I have the stubbornness to stick it out, but I'm already 23 and haven't even finished one college course. He laughed, genuine and heartening.
Time is on your side, Angel. The tribe will back you, and Lord knows I will need help for many decades to come.
I laughed with him. Of course time was on my side. I was a zombie. I threw my arms around his neck. Thank you for believing in me. No, not just that. For helping me believe in myself.
You are one of a kind, Angel,
he said, smiling as I released him. My phone alarm beeped. Oh, shit. I have to get to the morgue, but I haven't changed the gel in the head vats yet.
Go. Reg will take care of it.
He'll love me for that, I muttered, then brightened. Ooh, Dr. Nikas, what do you think about getting Reg a cat? He was joking about it the other day. I don't think it was really a joke. He could keep it in the living area and media room and stuff. It wouldn't be a bother in the lab. I could go to the shelter and find one that would be perfect for him. A surprise, you know? But if you don't think it would be a good idea, I understand. His eyes brightened.
It is a splendid idea, Angel. Now, get yourself to work.
Beaming, I scurried out, mind whirling with the conversation and the possibilities. Me, a neurobiologist. Dr. Crawford. Now wouldn't that be something?
Life continued to settle into a more normal routine. Andrew called Naomi, and they talked for close to an hour. Afterward, Naomi let us know that Christy had been working on her own with regards to the LZ-1 epidemic, though using Saberton personnel and resources. She added that Andrew was already cleaning house of anyone who'd been involved on the nastier side of Saberton research and operations. People continued to die in a variety of ways, both tragic and stupid, and made their way into the morgue. And I continued to judiciously harvest brains. I had brains in my belly, and all was right with the world. The FBI opened an investigation into Nicole Saber and her suspected ties to racketeering, fraud, kidnapping, and murder. Naomi and I celebrated with more ice cream. Alan seemed pleased that Nick and I had finally progressed to dating.
"I saw this coming when you first started working here," he said, smug.
And when Darrell happened to catch us stealing a quick kiss in the morgue parking lot, he gave me a bone-squishing hug and declared,
"I told you it would all work out."
A week after Kyle's funeral, I jerked awake to heavy pounding at the door. A bleary look at the clock told me it was 8 a.m. Ugh. Grumbling, I tugged on a robe, then shuffled out and opened the door. Nick stood on the porch with a backpack over one shoulder and a small cardboard box in his hands.
"Good morning, Angel,"
he said far too cheerfully.
"There was a package for your dad on the porch. You look especially perky this morning."
I gave him a middle finger, and then a kiss. I got called out at 2 a.m. to scrape a motorcyclist off the highway. Nick set the package on the table and gave me a more thorough kiss.
"Then it's a good thing I stopped by Lignap Cafe and picked up beignets."
"Oh, gimme."
Grinning, Nick fished a large white paper bag from his backpack and handed it over.
"Oh, man. They're still warm."
I grabbed a plate from the kitchen, then poured the beignets out, getting powdered sugar everywhere and not caring. This was how beignets were meant to be eaten. Warm and covered with a shitload of powdered sugar.
"Thank you,"
I managed around a mouthful of pastry.
"And once you're done, we can look through these."
He pulled a stack of brochures and pamphlets from the backpack and set them on the table, away from the sugar.
"College catalogs. TPCC is fine for getting your basics, but you're going to need doctorate-level education for the sort of research you want to do. That means after a couple of years, you should attend a university with a strong undergrad biology program."
"Have I told you lately that you're the best?" He chuckled and started to make coffee.
"I think the kiss at the door covered that."
I licked my fingers and poked through the stack. "These are from all around the country." I looked over at him. "The thought of living somewhere else feels so weird. I've lived here my entire life. I know this place."
"I get it. Same boat for me."
Nick started the coffee maker, then returned and fished a pamphlet from the stack.
"That's in Florida. Excellent biology program. And it just so happens to be where I was accepted to med school."
I smiled up at him. "You decided to go for forensic pathology?"
"You helped me crystallize my goals."
He kissed me.
"2 more years as a death investigator, then I'll be ready."
"Watch out, Florida. Here we come." I grinned, then sobered. Still, the thought of moving away is more than a little terrifying. Nick bent down and kissed me.
"You've faced down armed mercenaries and evil scientists. You jumped off a 3-story building on purpose. I think you can handle this."
"Sheesh, all right. But you'd better help me study for the college entrance exams."
"You know it."
My dad's bedroom door opened, forestalling another round of kissing. As he shuffled into the kitchen, he gave Nick a blurry squint.
"Warn you, Nick, did you spend the night here?"
"No, sir. I brought beignets for you and Angel. Oh, and I brought in a package for you."
"No shit."
He peered at the label, then ripped it open.
"Hot damn. Andrew done sent me the Swords and Swagger sequel."
I checked the package. Yes, definitely addressed to my dad. I'm not sure Andrew will have as much time to play, being the CEO and all.
No, that boy needs stress relief now more than ever.
He headed to the coffee maker and poured himself a cup.
It's such a pretty morning. I think I'll have my coffee outside. Give y'all a bit of privacy.
He winked at me, then headed out to the back porch. A mug smashed outside.
Jesus, fuck! My dad yelled.
I shot to my feet as he raced back inside.
Angel,
he gasped.
You got some visitors.
Huh? I ran outside, then stopped dead at the sight of Biggie and Tupac happily sunning themselves in my backyard.
Holy crap,
Nick breathed.
They came all the way here? That has to be 20 or 30 miles.
Cole Bayou is at the back of this property, I said, dashing tears of laughter away. I guess they made their way through the swamp and down a series of waterways to get here.
That is weirdly adorable.
He pulled me close.
Angel Crawford, I love you. And I even love your very weird pets.
I love you, Nick Galatas. And I promise they'll be outside pets only.
Imagine the litter box.
We kissed, and the gators bellowed their approval. Maybe. Believing in a better tomorrow wasn't so sappy after all.
This has been an Audible Studios production of White Trash Zombie Unchained, written by Diana Rowland, performed by Allison Mecklemore. Executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzik. Producer Neil Basic. Copyright 2017 by Diana Rowland. Sound recording copyright 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.